KYW Westinghouse Radio in Cleveland, Ohio. This is Harve Morgan, and this is Program PM. Bob Rove is along here, and is going to be servile to the extent of answering your questions, along with Earl Neff, our ufology investigators. Now, we thought we would kind of set the stage for things tonight with that, I call it space-type music, because as I understand it, there has been a space sighting, and we'll get into that in just a moment. First, let me ask, as I always do, anything new in the way of outer spaceology, Earl? How's it been going?
Well, I learned of something today that looked pretty good, and when I checked it out, I found it was one of those fraud...
How's that?
...phonies, the hoaxes, a party called the Report Center, and from all appearances, it was on the level, and then I double-checked it and found the whole thing was a fraud.
Hmm.
So those are the things you must be very careful of, and we always go to great trouble to... Check them and double
check.
You
don't just accept it on face
value.
Not
at all.
If someone says, I saw something purple up there, you do bother checking it out.
Right. This was just a crackpot.
Bob?
Well, as a matter of fact, a number of things have come by our way. Some very delightful, erudite, informed letters have been sent to us, as most of them, in fact, just about all of them always are. I want to thank, first of all, an armed forces man who feels that secrecy must be preserved if the objects are of a United States military nature.
Yeah, he had a good point in that letter.
Yes, that was an excellent point. Of course, his name is not to be mentioned as he requested. I wish also to thank John Spanton, who wrote us. He is near Buffalo and listening this evening. Hello to him. We appreciate your very technical letter, and I will correspond with you, as you suggested, and hope in there. I want to thank also the Reverend Carlos Sparks from Tennessee. And so far as a citizens band network relating to UFO, our range would be far too short. And, of course, the time element of talking between stations would be restricted to 5 minutes, which just wouldn't be enough.
I think, Bob, that this brings up a very big point that I've been noticing the past few weeks, and that is that the mail that we've been getting on this UFO roundtable on Program PM has been coming in, I think, from much farther afield than anything that I've experienced before on PM during the course of the last year and a half. I mean, people have been commenting about and writing us their comments on the UFO Roundtable from all over the South, from all over New York, Pennsylvania. So wherever you are listening, believe me, we're interested in not only the fact that you are listening, but also in your reaction to the program, the Ufology Roundtable on Program PM. Let us hear from you wherever you are. We haven't heard yet from Alaska, have we?
No, that's one that we've missed, although we've heard most of this side of the United States.
I wonder if we beam up that way. Earl, do you have some...
I'd wish to thank those who sent me season's greetings. Quite a few mentioned their interest in the series of programs that KYW has been putting on here. And I'd personally like to thank you, Harve, and KYW for permitting Bob and myself to tell this... listening audience, and it certainly is a great listening audience from judging from the response and from the areas from which we hear, permitting us to put on this series of what we believe is a very important subject, a subject of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. I received a...
Earl, let me just comment,
yes.
Because this being the beginning of a new year, I think that I would be lacking in my duties if I didn't... go above and beyond something we've been doing. All of the fellows here on KYW have been wishing everybody out there a happy new year and all. I think we should go beyond that, especially on this program. Everybody here, happy new year. And to all of you up there, if you are up there, we do wish you a happy new year. Although, I wonder if they have the same calendar. Well, I don't know. Anyway.
The Jews are down here.
let me check this, though, before we go too much further. We have some calls on the line. I'd like to take one or two of those, and then we're going to explore this unidentified flying object that was sighted yesterday. We'll tell you more about that in just a moment, but first let's do have a couple of questions here. What's yours, please? John, go ahead. Professor Charles A. Meany, in a 1956 article published by the Flying Saucer Review. These people, when they ask questions, by golly, they've got sources, haven't they?
Mm-hmm. That's
go ahead.
Good. That's excellent.
Good. I can't hear you. He appealed to readers and to researchers for an analysis of angel hair.
Mm-hmm.
Has any definite analysis been carried out to our knowledge? Go ahead. And if not, in a future recurrence, would it not be possible to get some of this substance called angel hair into a test tube before it dissolves and find out what it's all about? Well, let's find out. We talked about angel hair before. Any comments on that?
Charles Meany is the professor at Defiance College, as I think we have mentioned before on the air.
I'd like to get him on the program, by the way.
I'd like very much to call him some evening, with your permission. The angel hair has, on numerous occasions, been picked up. And I remember one evening mentioning a friend of mine some years ago had gotten some downstate. That was when so much of it had been festooned from the wires, the telegraph wires, and the Air Force later said it was a certain spider had been working very hard that night in producing these webs. But the angel hair, when it's collected, doesn't last very long, either in your hands or in a bottle.
What is very long?
Pardon me?
What is very long?
Well, it would only perhaps be just barely long enough to get it to a laboratory. It does leave your hands green or anything it touches. But physicist told me that he thought it was ionized air.
Bob, any comment on this?
This very well sums it up, as Earl has explained. My one source, Wilbert B. Smith, a physicist, superintendent of communications in Canada, on the board of transport, has analyzed angel hair or has had angel hair analyzed, let's put it this way, and he also has found it to be ionized air.
This is the man that's going to create the seventh dimension or something.
He goes into about 12 of them.
Uh-huh. What was this little contraption that you showed me one time? He was going to turn it around and create what?
There was artificial gravity field generators, and we can go into quite a lengthy discussion.
We did one night.
We'll probably do it again on request.
Okay, thank you for calling. Let's take one more call. Program PM, what's your question, please? You're referring to Major Keogh's book, where he stated that the saucers were recorded on radar. They were recorded making 90-degree turns. Go ahead. At approximately 5 to 9,000 miles an hour. You were talking with a friend where you work, and he said to make a 90-degree turn at the speed that we mentioned, 5,000 to 9,000 miles, this would be enough pressure to split an atom. And your question would be then, if this is possible, as stated, would there be an explosion if this 90-degree turn took place? Go ahead. And there'd be a force of approximately 16 million Gs, which is just about impossible for any matter to survive something like that. You'd like to find out about both these? Let's find out.
Well, they...
Go ahead, Earl.
I have seen on several occasions UFOs making 90-degree turns, not at the speeds you just mentioned, but I do know that they do the impossible, to us at least. Dr. Herman Oberth claimed that the reason they could do what they are doing is the fact that they are not only moving themselves through space, but with them, around them, they are surrounding themselves with these atmospheres, whatever you might wish to call them. In other words, you oftentimes do not even hear them because they're surrounded with, best thing I can call it is atmosphere.
Creating their own atmosphere.
Creating their own.
To negate ours.
Negate ours is correct, yes.
Well, would not then this atmosphere in turn, because it is made up of atoms, would not this atmosphere in turn then be subject to this pressure? What do you think, Bob?
This is this idea of the tremendous, this is a function of momentum, not a function of the atmosphere through which it's the object itself is traversing. And anything, regardless whether it has its own atmospheric pressure or not, making a right angle turn with relation to a gravitational field with relation to a linear trajectory is going to experience tremendous change in momentum and a tremendous impact of momentum. Now, however, again, it has been suggested purely on a theoretical basis that it is the momentum itself, the idea that to the saucer itself or the object itself, there has been no change of direction. And this, again, the term field with relation to, that's probably one of the most abused terms in the entire vernacular of UFO research is field. But field indicates some invisible force mechanism surrounding. And it has been suggested then that the force fields that do surround UFOs possibly can produce a cushioning effect in these right angle turns.
I can see a guy, you know, going through this, and since the pressure would destroy his atmosphere that he's carrying with him, you know, zooming along, zip, zip, oh,
right.
Just lost our atmosphere,
right.
Fellas, and go back and pick it up.
But I might say this, Harv, that explosions are by no means unknown in the field of UFOs. And it is entirely possible and conceivable that there are times when they do certain things that, like mentioned just on the phone, that would cause the explosion, because many times they have exploded.
Let me check now. Thank you very much for calling. Very good question. Let's talk now about this flying object that was sighted last night before we run completely out of time. Bob, could you place that call in while we...
Okay, will do. And, of course, as just a very brief review, this object was seen, of course, in the Ravenna area last night, approximately, a little after 7:30, and the Akron Beacon Journal had it reported. KYW carried immediately the report over radio on news, and we're going to place the call now, then I'll go in.
You're going to call George?
Right.
Popovich?
Use line 40, if you will, okay?
Okay.
Now, what do you know about this thing that was sighted last night?
Well, George called, George Popovich, who, by the way, is the director of the Akron UFO Research Committee and a very fine investigator, has been for years.
Reliable?
Very, very reliable. He called me at my home just before I left for the station tonight, and I told him to call here. Well, he got the call through before I arrived. But beyond what Bob just mentioned here from the news wires, I couldn't fill you in. I do know that he is perhaps by now... George is perhaps by now at the home of the people who witnessed this.
Now, George himself did not see the flying object.
I do not believe so, but George, like the rest of us, frequently get the calls from here, there, and everywhere, and I presume that's what happened in this case. Incidentally, while we were waiting, might I say that I received an interesting letter from a former Air Force man, and I just spoke with him on the phone a moment ago and asked if he objected to my using his name.
Okay.
Alan Manick called, wrote me a bit short note, and in this, with his note, he has this information that I think is quite interesting. Paul Ziats, Ziats of Emory Drive in Cleveland, on the evening of December 1st, 1962, at about 9:15 p.m., relates this: a group of friends and myself were playing football in the backyards between Angle and Grossy Drive. As we were leaving, I saw the ground reflecting a very bright white light. It looked as if someone had turned on a giant fluorescent light above us. Suddenly, I had a warm sensation, whether it was from the light or a reaction within my body when I realized that the light might be extraterrestrial. I do not know. I turned around to see where the light was coming from. I looked up and saw a bright flash of light. It looked as if the object was moving across the sky and exploded. From what I could make out in the very short time I saw the light, it was moving north to south over the eastern sky. There was no sound whatsoever accompanying the light. After the disappearance of the light, everything got dark again, and there was no trace of any object or debris falling from the light.
Hmm.
And at the time that this report was made, a very detailed account, of, by the way, has gone to NICAP in Washington, I received many other statements, and I was watching TV at the time, and the TV was full of snow. It never acted quite that badly, and this was at a NASA man's home where we were watching it.
So this then would seem to lead one to believe that there's something to this particular sighting on December 1st,
yes,
right?
I have quite a few reports on it. I hoped at the time to tell them, but time didn't permit.
Okay, now, let me knock another report in the teeth. We've been getting a lot of calls, Earl has and Bob has, I know, about a report of a sighting over Saskatchewan on the evening of December 24th. That was a week ago this past Monday. Now, people said, well, it was done in all seriousness and all like this, and yes, there was a sighting of an unidentified flying object December 24th reported on KYW-TV. Well, just to set the matter straight, this is true in a way, but since it's almost 11 o'clock at night, and I think most children are in bed, let's just report that This was not the kind of UFO that we're concerned with on this program. The report that Dick Goddard made was a true report. There was an object over Saskatchewan headed toward the Cleveland area that night, but it was nothing more than Santa Claus and his reindeers. And Dick Goddard, in all seriousness, truthfully, reported it. And don't you ever try to tell Dick Goddard that there's not a Santa Claus, or an Easter Bunny, for that matter. All right, now, we're going to get this report. Bob, is it all set up?
Yes, on the line right now, we have Mr. George Popowich, whom we've already introduced a moment ago. He will introduce the gentleman who made this sighting as we pick up line 40.
Okay, let me just check now, George.
Yes.
There, this is Harv Morgan. Just to get this straight, did you see this, the
flying
object you saw?
No, I'm only investigating.
And you have the people there ready to talk to you?
Yes, Mr. Carl Rice.
Oh, okay, go ahead. We'll just listen to you then.
Harv, am I on? Well, I have with me tonight Mr. Carl Rice, that he and his wife and two other persons had observed what I have labeled as a UFO. And this occurred last evening, approximately around 6 p.m. at Ravana, Ohio. So I would like to have you talk with Mr. Carl Rice, one of the observers. Carl?
Mr. Rice?
Hello.
Mr. Rice, could you describe in detail just exactly what you saw? Now, what time was this again you saw it?
Approximately 10 minutes to 6.
10 minutes to 6?
Yes, sir.
And what did you see?
Well, I saw a bright light, and it was standing still. It wasn't too bright. It was like a dull, like an old-fashioned light bulb.
Mm-hmm.
And it stood still, and I took one of my employees home up to Rosenwald, about, right there, half a mile, up across Highway 44. And we got closer to it. It still was standing still, and then the light went out. Then this light came back on again, went out again.
Yeah, but how long did it stand still like that?
Well, approximately, I'd say about 15 minutes all told. Mm-hmm. And when it came back on, well, it didn't come back on the second, third time. The red light came on. There was approximately 6 of them that I could see in a crescent shape. And it made, not exactly a circle, it was kind of a quick turn and headed back, it would be southeast.
But this turned from yellow in the beginning to red later, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was approximately a sixth light that I can make out.
Is this conceivable? This is at Ravana. Is it fairly hilly around there? Are there hilly areas?
And right where I am, they're standing in there on top of the hill, not a big hill, but a fancy gravity site hill.
My thinking is this, and I'm just asking it in the realm of conceivability, is it conceivable that this could have been what you saw over there, headlights parked somewhere, and then this would give the yellow effect through a haze. It was kind of foggy last night, and I remember driving home, and then later the car might have turned around, backed up, and gone off in the other direction, which would have shown you their taillights. Is this possible?
Well, this is in the air. This is right over top by it.
But couldn't have been on a high hill somewhere, huh?
No, sir. Mm-hmm.
Who have you reported this to? Have you reported to the Air Force?
No, I reported to the record carrier in they reported to Akron Beacon Journal.
All right. Right now, let me, because I know that Bob Grove and Earl Neff will probably have some questions that of an investigating nature that they would like to ask you. So let me turn you over right now to Bob Grove for any questions that he might have. Mr. Rice? Okay, fine. Good evening, Mr. Wright. Okay, this is the part I missed is how much overhead, for example, did this thing go? Did it have a trajectory immediately overhead, or was it pretty much in the horizon?
Well, it was up overhead from where it was trying to make a turn, you know.
It was just about overhead. Well, that would rule out anything being on a nearby hill. That's what I was wondering.
No,
did you hear any noise?
Not a single noise of any kind.
Oh, okay. Did you notice any interference with any radio, any lighting, anything like that?
Well, we have occasional interference of all kinds.
At the trailer park.
Oh, yeah.
But nothing undue, nothing unusual as an actual physical effect was noticed, is that right?
No, sir.
Okay, hang on. We'll pass this over now to Earl Neff.
Good day, Mr. Rice. That was Earl Neff speaking. Bob pretty much covered it. I did want to ask you one question, however. Was there a pulsation, did you notice?
A what?
A pulsation of light. Did the light seem to pulse?
No.
Pulsate?
Mm-hmm.
It was constant?
It was constant.
That's right. I see.
That was the red and white light.
The red being at the upper part, perhaps?
Well, the white light went out, and the red came on.
I see. In other words, it interchanged. thank you very much. I'm going to turn you back to Harb Morgan.
Yes.
Mr. Rice, this may sound like a lawyer talk, but were there any corroborating witnesses on this? Did anyone see it with you?
Well, there was two of my employees. One was at the barn, rode along with me up there. I have a car in the garage, and we wanted to stop and see about that.
Mm-hmm.
He rode along with me. And then John Conkle, which was along with me, too, one of my employees.
Mm-hmm. And then three people saw the same thing, and you all agree on what you saw.
And my wife saw it from the window, but all she saw was a white light, because she didn't pay much attention to it. She thought it was an awful bright star, but I don't think it was.
Is that a fairly populated area out there?
Well, it was a bright star last night.
No, I said, is it fairly populated with people out there?
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard of anybody else also witnessing this phenomenon?
No, I haven't. Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps someone hearing us talk about it tonight, has seen that, and I hope it's not the power of suggestion working on them. If you have, call us at 241-5637. We'd like to find out about it if we have time to get to your call before the program is off the air tonight. Do you intend to tell the Air Force about this, Mr. Rice?
Well, I don't know whether I should or not.
If you do, and I wish you would you let us get back with you next week again and find out what their reaction has been to your report?
Yes, sir.
Would you do that?
Yes,
and will you let the Air Force know about it then?
Well,
okay. Let me ask Earl or Bob, who should he call at the Air Force to notify them about this? Where would be the nearest place to call?
Well, Wright-Patterson and
Wright
Dade would be the one.
Wright-Patterson would be your best,
receiver.
Yes.
Yeah.
Either
right.
Major Lieutenant Colonel Green perhaps would be the better.
And what's the other gentleman we talked to?
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, Friend.
Or Colonel Green. Colonel Green or...
Which
Lieutenant
one were we
Colonel...
here on the program that time?
That was Friend, I believe.
Friend,
all right,
yes.
And I call Lieutenant Colonel Friend at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Lieutenant Colonel Friend.
Okay.
Formerly Major.
That's in Dayton, and I'd be very interested to find out his comments. All right?
What's the name, please?
Lieutenant Colonel Friend.
Friend?
Friend, yes. At Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Right.
That's down in Dayton. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Rice. Appreciate your comments.
Yes, sir.
You follow at your round table.
Bye.
Well, I'd like to find out more about
very
that.
Good.
Probably by next week, we'll have quite a beauty to present on the air on whatever happens on this air. I'm looking forward to the information coming in.
Maybe we can get something tonight at 241-5637 if anyone has heard about that. Let me take one more telephone question here. These people have been hanging on very closely. Can you stand by, please? Program PM, this is the Ufology Roundtable. What's your question, please? What's your question? Go ahead. Why won't the Air Force tell all they know? And if it's from a higher kind of human being, why won't somebody let the public know? Well, I think this is a question that really can't be answered, so I won't present it to our investigators here. We've learned it before. We don't know why. There are those that say the Air Force is telling all that they do know. Most people, certainly those Bob and Earl, I don't think agree with that. But thank you for calling anyway. Program PM, your question, please. Are there any special times when the UFOs are sighted in this area? Has this been mostly a night thing or what?
No, the only thing I can say there is at night, naturally, anything that's bright in the sky is going to be more visible than it is in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, as far as sightings are concerned, I have seen as many in the daytime as I have at night, and I think that would be universally accepted over.
Let me put a twist on this question. Are there more sightings when the moon is full? I'm serious. Are there? You know, you talk to bartenders and you will say, oh, boy, I'd read those full moon nights. You got some real weirdos in here.
Well,
you know?
Actually, a full moon night is not the best night to look for UFOs because it's too bright.
There's too much glare. The same way.
Yes, I'd much rather look on a night when there is not a full moon.
Mm.
There are other things to do on a full moon night.
The actual time of day has little to do with it, though, except at night you can see better.
Right.
Okay, thank you for calling. And we just have a couple minutes left. Earl, I think there's something you wanted to comment on.
Well, I wanted to say that, getting back to the letters and the comments, a Doug Kenny, who was traveling in Pennsylvania in the mountains, said that on his car radio he was catching last week's broadcast very clearly. And then I received a letter. I don't know how these people get my name or a correct address, but it gets to me, from a Timothy Green Beckley from New Brunswick, New Jersey, and he starts, but I'll just read this first line. Dear Mr. Neff, this is just a short letter to let you know I enjoyed very much listening to you on KYW's PM show last night. And then he writes this full letter, which is very interesting. Another letter I received from a Bill Engel, Says I heard you broadcast and was impressed with the arguments you gave in behalf of the existence of flying saucers. I haven't given much thought to them since the fur died down. I presume he means back in 47. I have read some of the Major Kehoe's writings, and I have an open mind on the subject. There has been much confusion involved with the reports of unidentified objects. Every time a sighting is made, there is instant clamoring of ridicule and denials. It has seemed to me that the extent to which the Derriers go to cast doubt on the reports adds credence to the claims. I'm not intelligent enough to understand complex matters, so I've taken a sort of agnostic stand. I don't know for sure. Therefore, I can form no opinion until I find out. And so on and so forth. And signs it Bill Engel.
We're just about out of time now. Unfortunately, this is always the case. Bob, any final comments?
Yes, I'd like to wish some fellows in Toledo, Phil Urbanski's group, best of luck in their new UFO organization. I'd have some other... many other questions which I have been unable to get to. Let me sum up by saying that we will answer these questions next week on the air that were directed personally to our group, plus the fact that naturally here at 241-5637, both Earl and myself will be very happy to answer questions as they come in after program time. We'll both be here next week to follow up on this very recent UFO sighting, as well as some more of the letters, which I'm sure will continue to come in.
Don't forget that number is 241-5637. You can still call and you can still get answers. Bob and Earl will both stick around to answer those questions for you. Thank you very much, Bob Grove and Earl F., for joining me again on PM's Ufology Roundtable. Right back again at the same stand.